Hello and welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. This is a special podcast in this case, where we do something we've not really done before. In the middle of 2022, James and myself decided that we wanted to run another one of our less standard wargaming events, and decided also to record something of a little podcast documentary about it. This is That Story. In August 2022, things had moved on quite a bit, and we'd started to kind of actually define what the rules were going to be, how people were going to build groups of models they'd be bringing along, and then also having the sort of final pitch that would be developed into the final game itself. So, join us with episode 2. We all love Goop Juice. Evening, James.
Hello.
It's very warm with me today. I think it's probably very warm with you too, isn't it?
I believe we have, in our preamble, discussed that it is warmer where I am, yet I'm still wearing jeans.
I mean, I don't like wearing shorts, although I am wearing shorts at the moment.
I should have worn shorts. I even bought shorts this summer, but anyway, that places us in time that we are still in the summer. So
we are, which is probably a good sign because we're going to talk about progress. So
Hell yeah.
It shows we have had progress whilst it's still hot in the UK, which probably won't last for that much longer.
I've checked the weather. It won't. But
good,
hopefully.
Good. Honestly, I must say, I mean, there's something about wargaming which makes me feel that, you know, heat is not the friend of wargaming, and the idea of thinking about wargaming when it's warm is slightly unappealing.
It's not called warm gaming, am I right?
This is correct. It's not. I mean, if only we had industrial Warhammer World, air conditioning everywhere, then maybe I would be, you know, more receptive to it, but...
Blessed. All right. What is it we're doing today in this, August? We're in August.
Tis in August.
It further.
Yes. The August catch-up for the... I've forgotten what we were calling this. We didn't call it a name.
Did we call it anything?
Okay.
No, we didn't. Or we did, but we've probably just called it a temporary name.
It's the follow-up to our Inc. 28 event, which is a AOS 28 event. It might get a sexier name at some point, but let's call it AOS 28. So, yes, we are planning to... run an AOS 28 event in 2023. So we're expecting quite a degree of work to go into this. So yeah, maybe we should have a bit of a catch up on what work has been going on. I know that you and the narrative folk, James, have been very busy enough that I've not been able to keep track of it all.
That's why I keep notes everywhere. But yeah. We've been busy. So I think when we last left off, so what we haven't done is listened back to what we did in our last recording. So apologies if this is like the previously on part of the podcast. But I believe last time we left off by saying that we were going to get a number of themes generated by the people who wanted to help out with the event. And that we would then use community voting to whittle that down into something, anything, really. And so we did do that. And that was one of the big things which we did throughout the beginning of July and rolling into some of this month as well. So we ended up with, I'm thinking it was about 60 odd different pitches for like how we...
It was a lot, yeah.
It was a lot. But then what we did was we... asked people to essentially pick their top 10, I think it was. It was long enough ago that I've forgotten how many we asked people to do. But what we did was we put those together in a survey. We had a few other questions about like time and place and things. But then what we focused on was that we had 60 big pitches. And then we just said, okay, anyone who's interested in this, pick your top 10. And then from that, we ended up with some favorites. And that was a really fun process, essentially, just seeing all the votes coming in from people, seeing people upset that they accidentally clicked too many and some people thinking they didn't click enough. But ultimately, it came down to like 4 or 5 clear favorites for the like general, like that first little bit of flavor text. So I was just looking them up. We called them our starter paragraphs.
And yeah, there was a couple that got into double digits, which I think most of us would know.
Wanted. And we also used it, this was actually quite a nice opportunity to almost poll ideas where people might not be as comfortable with certain ideas, and people may have just had, you know, some general issues with some of the things. So we actually used it as an opportunity to filter out some things earlier on.
I can't believe that Trump, AOS in Trump land got nixed at that stage. It was, yeah, a sad day for some of us anyway. So,
I mean, that's true. But also for like non-lols sort of point of view, it was quite nice to like know that some people were just not cool. Like some of the pitches were around harm to children, let's say. Not an amount of harm, but could potentially involve that. And some people said, you know what, we're not cool with that. And it's like, great, we now know that we're not going to have that in our game.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I object to children most of the time anyway, so.
Wow.
It's small and noisy, which is, you know, goblins only are my small and noisy thing limit.
Indeed. So where we got to were top 3 of these pitches. And would you like me to recount them?
I think that, yeah, it's going to be, this is all spoiler free, isn't it, effectively? I mean,
it depends when we release this.
Well, yes, but there's nothing that's going to ruin the experience for anyone unless they're a real purist.
No. And this is like the making of documentary, so we can George Lucas it all we want.
That's true.
So in third place, we had a pitch which reads out, they called it The Great Game, played by the Dark Gods of Chaos. Their playing pieces are mortal souls plucked from the realm as willing or unwilling pawns for the war in the realm of chaos itself. You have been drawn here, whether a favoured servant or admired foe, and are now forced to dance to the will of your new master for a time. Succeed, and perhaps you'll be able to go home. ... So that one came in third. So, sucks to be the Dark Gods. Bronze medal.
Bronze medal. Well, you know, that's better than the rest of us ever going to accomplish. So.
All on the path to glory. True. And so second place was, Avast! The oceans of the realms call to you. There are many strange types who call these ports their home, some seeking adventure, wealth, perhaps vengeance, but all willing to serve at your side for a while. Maybe one of them even has another part of that treasure map you found. Gather your crew and set sail on the waves, and perhaps you will be rich at the end of your days. How did you feel about that one, Drew?
I like boats. As anyone who listens to the main Tiny Plastic People pod will know, boats are my... Boats are a poor home in a lot of ways, so...
You're speaking to someone who owned a houseboat for a while, so...
But no,
I agree. and then in first place we have the Queen has guide. I'm going to start that one again. The Queen has died, leaving no daughters to take her throne. Merchant reavers, Puritan clinics. Oh God, I need to really start this one again and drink more beer or less beer.
Well, it's like pool, isn't it? You drink enough and then you hit a sweet spot and then there you lose that sweet spot. Yeah.
For podcasting with beer. The Queen has died, leaving no daughters to take her throne. Merchant reavers, Puritan clerics, ambitious adventurers with no thought beyond claiming a title, all seek their claim. And where are you? Do you serve one of the false blood claims, the will of the temples, or only your own fate? That was our number one.
So, it's strong.
It was good. And it was none of them, I would say, were the ones which I actually expected. Apart from maybe the boat one. I thought the boat one was going to do well. But yeah, really strong pitches which came from the voting. So what we did following that vote was assemble some teams. So we had people who were asking to help out with the event, and the question to those people were like, cool, what do you want to help out with, or what do you feel comfortable to help out with, and how much time can you give, etc.
Yeah.
So from that, we split the people who wanted to help up into three main groups. So we have like a narrative group, a rules group, and like a logistics group. And maybe you can talk more about some of those because I'm about to burp. So
I've been hiccuping quite a lot as well. So the intent of the editing process will show how many burps and hiccups there are in this part, or how many I can be bothered to leave in. Yes, they. So obviously we ended up with a narrative group, and then we broke things down into logistics and rules, because one of the issues we had, particularly on the rule side of things, is that there's no convenient rule system to use really for small scale skirmish in the grimier, more skull and sort of tentacle filled end of the Age of Sigmar kind of universe. So we ended up with quite a kind of involved process there, where we actually looked at quite a lot of different skirmish systems, and I'm fully aware that there's probably a perfect one out there that just none of us had heard of.
Just beyond our reach.
Yes, just beyond our reach. So yeah, after a lot of sort of umming and ahhing and scoring things in different ways, we ended up deciding that we're gonna, well, I think we settled on the fact that we're going to use the Necromunda 17 rules, but I think in reality they're going to end up more like the Mordheim 2022 rules, because there's a lot of Necromunda that is, well, superfluous to Necromunda, you might also say, but superfluous certainly to an AOS style setting thing. So beyond the very basics of sort of dice rolling and stats, I think we're going to end up seeing quite different. And obviously, if Games Workshop are listening, we're not doing that. And don't come and set our houses on fire and break our legs.
They're fine. We've been buying the books, so that's all they need. That's
true. They've had their pennies. So yeah, I think Necromunda is. I mean, Necromunda as a game in itself, I really like. But I think what made the decision difficult to use it, or use in fact any game, was that there's no really sort of sound system to go off. And Necromunda has a lot of problems that make it very clunky, which in a kind of campaign style or one-off game style, you know, are fine. But to make an event run smoothly, it can be quite difficult. So I think there's this challenge here that we want the rules to be a lot more accessible. And also people who aren't used to Necromunda are coming into the game on a reasonably even footing to those who are used to sort of traditional Necromunda.
That was something which was important, which came from like the surveys which we put out as well, that we kind of asked the question a few different ways, but it was to essentially get the feel for what kind of game people wanted to play. And they wanted the chaos of a Necromunda-esque game, but they also wanted some of the more like modern GW experiences, which is more like that kind of Warcry as well. But we also know that those two things don't match particularly well because of the way the stat lines work.
And at least Necromunda has the kind of the approach that it has stats that aren't just directly linked to combat, which, you know, I think we talked about on the first sort of part of this, is that we wanted a kind of reasonably role play element, and maybe not just specifically sitting down and rolling dice, but the idea that just, you know, bonking things with a stick isn't the only solution. And certainly the sort of Inc. 28 games that we ran, the event that we ran quite a few years ago now, mostly thanks to COVID, it being quite a few years ago, that, yeah, you could do more than just fight. You know, there was a bit of thinking involved in that. And Necromunda does support that, at least it has stats that aren't just purely sort of combative and things. Mm. So, yeah, I think that's sort of where we are rules-wise. One of the kind of key things, obviously, I say for us, but really for everyone, is that we kind of need to be able to produce a set of rules that people can start kit bashing and doing things with relatively early.
Yeah, that's one thing which I was going to mention, is that we set up these three teams, and one of the main reasons for that was that we had so much interest in people who wanted to help, but we also needed to know what they wanted to help with. Mm. And what we didn't want was too many people in each team essentially talking so much, even if like we would then go back to the larger group with something to then discuss further as a way to develop things, making them work in smaller groups, just helps the flow of ideas and the flow and helps not stagnate too much. So you have a few people talking about things, and if people said they were interested in rules and narrative, the question was then, well, which one would you prefer to be involved in? Because then it shares the whole task out a little bit more fairly as well. And we set up, so we've got, I think, 3 or 4 people in the narrative team, 3 or 4 in the rules team, and then 3 or 4 in the logistics team. And each one of those teams was given essentially a spec based on what had come out of the surveys. So we knew what, like, rules we have, like a need to have, a few things which we want to have, a few things that we could have, and then also a what do we need to have for the like the bare minimum, the MVP, if you were.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think certainly if anyone's listening to this for guidance on, you know, organizing your own events, that is very important. And it's easy to be something that you can lose focus on, because certainly on the rules side of things, you know, speaking personally, one of the things I have to keep reminding myself is that, you know, we're not trying to make perfect rules that I would want as a system that I was putting my name on. What we want is a set of rules that work for a single one-off event. And okay, you know, if it gets used in future, that's fine, but it doesn't need to be, you know, I have views on a lot of things in wargaming and stuff. It doesn't need to be solving all of these issues.
And one key thing is that we know that we have a lot of people who want to help GM games, which means that we can rely on people to be helping interpret rules and situations without the need for like an explicit rule deck, even between games, between different GMs or something. And that also, we know that the general flavor of the games that we're going for are very much towards this narrative bent, where even the goals of each warband within the games can be shaped by a sentence rather than a victory point.
Mm-hmm. Quite, yeah. Yeah, and there's certainly starting to be some overlap between rules and also narrative. And I don't think we've set it into stone as yet, but the idea is that we will almost, I say almost certainly, it's highly likely that I think we're looking at teams of players divided up just to kind of give, you know, in some ways that's logistical management. In some ways it's also like you've got a group of people who are then encouraged, incentivized to kind of interact together and things. But maybe also, because I think what we talked about a lot in the first section is that, James, you'd just come back from a mega game. Mm-hmm. And I think that was your first mega game, was it?
It was, yes.
Yeah. And we wanted to capture some of that kind of interactivity between players, that, you know, you're not just facing an opponent across the table and rolling some dice, that maybe there's some shenanigans and some skullduggery. Mm. And
allowing for that within a almost like a war game perspective was something which we thought about a little bit. I don't know whether a little promotion for the TPP podcast, but we did do a special on the mega game eventually, talking about our experiences. Check it out on the feed.
Yeah. If we were on YouTube, we could make it appear.
Oh, we could, but we're not.
We're not, no. But, yeah, and so I think having teams helps that. And also having teams means that... I mean, I've run a lot of both tabletop roleplay and a lot of live roleplays over the years, and one of the things I'm always very conscious of is that you want to set up your sort of social system. Does that make sense? You know, the way your game works socially encourages everyone to be able to have a fair shot at the same weight of involvement in the game.
Yeah.
And I think teams can definitely help that, because then it isn't just... It's almost like you're talking about when you're developing the rules and you're developing the different groups, is that if groups are smaller, then it's easier for voices to be heard, and you don't just end up with a group of the loudest people setting the way things are going to be and stuff.
Yeah. And it's also really important that it is not any one person's game, despite it being a difficult thing to manage and a difficult thing for, like, you're already making essentially work for yourself, when sometimes I know a lot of people would be just like, sorry, I'm going to write this myself. And they go and superhero the whole thing. That's what we call it in like work and design, where someone would just go and do the whole thing because they think they can do it best themselves. And it's not to say that they can't do it themselves. It's just to make sure that they're checking in with other people along the way. And while I think that it's harder work at the beginning to establish the teams, establish how you're going to work together, establish like a good essentially working practices, and you're feeling that out, because there's sometimes people who you might not have ever had to work with in the past, and it's all done online as well, so you need the tools online, you need things like codes of conduct between yourselves to make sure that if you have a disagreement, you know how to deal with those things. So it is difficult. I'm not going to say it's a walk in the park, but the value it brings to it means that as a whole group, you're all contributing, and it means that no one's contributions are above and beyond anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that reflecting into the kind of how the actual game will play on the day is, I think, like you say, it's just a good way of everything working and... Yeah. Ensuring a kind of, well, I say ensuring, putting as much likelihood of a kind of successful outcome as possible.
You're aligning, you're like aligning your vision. That's kind of the whole thing, is about aligning that vision.
Yes.
Making sure that the players, the GMs, the runners on the day, the people who organized the vegan chili are all pointing in the right direction and can support each other to have just a fun time, because that's actually what the number one thing that came out of our surveys was: people didn't actually even care that much about particular rule sets. They just wanted a fun weekend. Mm-hmm. So that's actually the main goal of everything, is to have a fun couple of days with your friends, rolling dice and telling a fun story.
Yeah.
And losing sight of that is the part which we don't want to do.
Yeah, no, I think it's easy to maybe not lose focus, because you get distracted by other things. And again, it's, you know, it's same on the narrative, it's same on the rule side of things. It's very easy to be like, you know, you follow a rabbit hole, and it's an interesting rabbit hole. It's probably good stuff, but at the end of the day, It's the total value it gives to the experience.
I was going to say, it's always good to just jump into like the conversations when that starts happening and just say, that sounds really cool. And one thing which I've been trying to do is just make sure that I capture the notes and things, what's been happening in the chats and stuff, so we've got reference to go back. But at the same time, it is good to just say, oh, pop a pin in it. What we actually need right now is a way to build warbands. Because that is the most important thing we need to get to before we can get more people involved with actually making fun models. So,
yes, and I think that's our next gateway, I think, really, isn't it? It's putting out the from a narrative side, it's putting out the inspiration pack of what we're going for. And then also having alongside that, not the character, not the kind of, not the band creation rules, but the idea that you will have X many people, and some of them might be quite big and some of them might be really small, and this is where you should focus your ideas on. You know, you're putting the team together, but you're not worried about specific, you know, character stats at this point, and you're not worried about too much stuff, because at the end of the day we have the flexibility there that we can also work to, you know, accommodate quite a lot of people's things.
Yeah, if we see someone put together like a whole warband of things with hammers and we've forgotten to write the rule for hammers, there's nothing stopping us adding the rule for hammers at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm looking at, and I need to have a think about myself before I really sort of discuss it too much with the rest of the rules team, is that stealing from other game systems, is that Saga has a very neat way of presenting stuff, and it has a sort of battle board for each warband. Each warband in Saga, which is, well, as I say, it's Viking Age. Viking Age is the copy of Saga that I have. There are other things. But you have a sheet, H4 sheet, and you apply dice to that sheet, and that gives you certain effects. Mm. And this sets something off to me, is that when we ran the Ink 28 event, I was very keen on, like, every group's, you know, although we were using just general Necromunda stats, every group had a kind of unique identifier. And what we came up with was that each group had like a special, a power, and it was like, okay, this is your group's ability. But I don't feel that anyone really got to take advantage of it.
I remember that. I remember that we kind of all forgot that we all had abilities.
Yes. You know, and they were all themed to the various people, you know, different, you know, very diverse warbands in the Ink 28 sort of settings. You know, the orcs, and there were cultists, and there were inquisitors and things, and they all had different themed things, but they just got forgotten. So what I was really liking the idea of is that we're not taking Saga's main thing, that, you know, you're not buying abilities in the same way that Saga does, which involves dice rolls, but actually that each group, each warband has an A4 sheet, and that has everything they need to know to really play the game on. And that includes their special abilities and things. So you can come along and, well, one, you can remember that things exist, but also that you, in front of you, know that you have something that no one else will be able to do that makes you unique. And I think this is the, you know, certainly for me, it's the big drive of not just a 28 game, if that makes sense. The 28 prefix being attached to a setting to explain how it exists with more skulls and weirdness. But the idea that, because you're not playing, you know, you're playing a boutique kind of setting and a boutique game where, yeah, there's X many people. So this setting is written to some degree for you, and you know, it accommodates you and the things different. It isn't having to be an army book, or it isn't having to be a published thing, which has to work in balance with everything else.
It's a lot like working with your GM at the beginning of a campaign to develop your character and develop their backstories so that they fit in with the rest of the party, rather than just coming up to a party or coming up to a game and saying, I've got this guy, he does this, and she does this, and I'm from the cool land behind me, and I only do rad stuff. It's more of a conversation, and it's that sort of almost burping again quality. It's almost like that session zero, but the session zero is going to be a long time because you also have to build models to make your session zero. No, I completely agree, and that sounds really interesting, particularly around like the Saga stuff, and that's completely in like our line of thinking, where like we can be providing like one thing which things like Necromunda don't have is like consistent use of like all gang cards and things, because you might have just missed the print run, But we've actually got an opportunity to make sure that those things are available to players and like might be bespoke to players or might be bespoke to a certain table or those sheets. Yeah. Everyone has the same kind of sheet if like at the bare minimum, so we can make sure that players are all having at least a consistent experience across the whole weekend, unless they've wanted to do more, and that's fine.
Quite. So, and certainly one of the things, I mean, this is a deep cut, and going back to what effectively is the ERPod, which is Miniatures Monthly, I don't know if it was Tom Senior or Chris Thurston who said it, but that Age of Sigmar being different to 40K, that 40K is about people using gear, and Age of Sigmar is about sort of general tools being wielded by exceptional people. Mm. And I think that, you know, as a tip to the hat to Age of Sigmar, that it would be quite nice to do that. So it's, you know, a Stormcast with a sword versus an Orc with a sword. The swords are the same. It's the character and the nature of the people using them that is telling the setting and is telling that story, which I think is interesting and is quite different from sort of 40K and Ink 28, because Ink 28 or 40K, you know, the normalness of humans in extraordinary circumstances is part of the setting, whereas Age of Sigmar is balls to the wall, gangbusters crazy a lot of the time, and that includes the kind of the people in that world.
Exactly, yeah. And I think one thing which we as a narrative team have to keep doing is almost resetting back to making sure that we're not being too ambitious, because the Ink 28, the 28 moniker kind of says skulls and weirdness and tentacles and strangeness. So Age of Sigmar is very big and gregarious, and what we need to make sure we keep doing is just pitching it just that little, like wind the dial slightly back, but keep the interesting part of that. So it's so one thing which we decided was, one of the hard things to do with AOS is decide on which realm you're in. And the way we decided that was just going, fuck it, shyish.
So your way of dialing it back is to go for the most skulls realm
It fits the skulls at the very
least. It does fit the skulls, yes.
But that's like, just thinking about like decision making and things like that, that's almost like the least interesting decision you can make, because it affects so much stuff, but it actually doesn't, because AOS is still so broad and still so wide. So at the end of the day, that one was very much just like, do we need a debate about this? Or if someone just said it's in there, can we just go with that? Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first things which we did, was just go, okay, we need to decide on a realm quickly before anything else. And would anyone be upset if I just said it's in the realm of death? And then we continued on from there.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, it leads to a kind of nice monochrome black and purple colour scheme, which makes painting terrain a lot easier.
Yeah, and we already had such richness come from those three themes that we'd been given, that the realm doesn't matter that much. But like I was saying, like the whole dialing it back is more the bringing the Gribbly AOS 28 and that back into it, just to make sure that we're not getting too hung up on the endless possibility scape, which is Age of Sigmar. So, yeah.
Have you read Ghoulslayer, by the way?
I have not. I really should actually read more AOS fiction.
Ghoulslayer's, well, good. I read all of it, which is rare for a Black Library book, but it's set in Shaiish, in a weird realm, and it's very not Age of Sigmar tabletop. It's very its own thing, which, you know, isn't always the case with Black Library fiction. Sometimes it's just like reading the unit descriptions out the codex with, and then they did a thing put on the end of it. But yeah, Ghoulslayer is very different, and I keep thinking about it whenever we sort of talk some of the narrative ideas.
Probably read it, because that sounds legit. So my thought was mostly that a lot of people will probably have bought Cursed City, And that's probably a good starting point for people's ideas. And there's been quite a good refresh of that range lately as well. But also, it still contains multitudes within it and elsewhere within the range. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking about vampires, undead, ghouls, zombies, ghosts, werewolves, werewolf vampires, rat vampires, all sorts. You've got tons in there. Horrible monsters which are cursed by Nagash, etc.
Yeah.
There's multitudes. So, yeah. Yeah.
I think the option to have the death world be an actual living place is something that Age of Sigmar does very well and also kind of very badly at, that it has like a lot of death factions that are very personality driven, and you kind of feel like, oh well, that's the Sharish. But in reality, yeah, Cursed City and Ghoul Slayer show that, yeah, there's just normal people living in Sharish. It's weird and they're quite goth, but you know, they're still normal people. Goths are normal people.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. And it's got that whole the idea of Shaiish came from like all the different underworlds collapsing together and just being born in this place, and then some of those underworlds still exist. So it's, yeah, like some parts of it are just like titanic battles, like almost like Valhalla style, and other places just pits of misery for people who did bad things. And while like the current narrative is that Nagash is like uniting them all and becoming the Lord of Death, some of those things must still exist within the world. So
yes, and I mean, I suppose that's how Cursed City and things, you know, certainly in the setting, that argument that, well, vampires, although they follow Nagash, actually quite like just being lords of loads of scrubby humans and things, and you know, they have a vested interest in keeping at least some degree of mortal existence going and things to be preyed on, if nothing else.
Yeah, hell yeah. So I was going to say, we've been prattling on it for a little while. I was going to say that we've actually done quite a lot of work to the narrative so far as well to get us to this point, yet we're still not even done with getting towards like that first pitch document.
Mm-hmm.
So that process has basically been writing, rewriting, having a go at different sections, coming up with places, coming up with ideas, coming up with items, and we've kind of come up with a general summary of the game so far. This might change, of course, so whatever I read out is not final by any means, but it's definitely giving us a drive forward, because as soon as we came up with this, it allowed us to start thinking about places, and places really inform rules. Mm-hmm. And they inform characters, and they inform items and values and all sorts. So it's been quite a fun process to go through this and just talk around ideas and then filter them out to this pitch. So if you don't mind, mate, I'm going to do my reading again.
Sounds good.
So the current pitch for our game is as follows. Our queen is dying. Shaiish will always take its due in the end. Cloistered in an ancient throne high atop the tallest tower of Illanmanster, Roswitha the Unfaded's ancient heart slows. Her death will bring with it an end to the Sorge dynasty and leave only a court of squabbling cutthroat rivals. Each lusts after power of the empty throne, daring someone else to make the first move. They play these lofty games from tall towers built on top of those less fortunate, but a few of this drifting city of flotsam and wrecked ships ever climb much higher than where the waves reach. Gosh, that's hard to read. I'll keep going, though. The Isles of Mulsavelch. Mulsavelch? I've never actually said that out loud either, so this is the problem with writing a lot.
I mean, that's the classic, though, of any fantasy thing, is it's just the when you actually come to try and talk to someone about it.
The Isles of Monsavelsh begin to move to the rhythms of intrigue, while nobles wine and dine, suspiciously eyeing each other in the briny dockways and the courtways Blood is spilled by unknown thugs and foreign blades. Riches are promised, influence is exerted, and nobody knows quite where they stand on the slippery rocks. Our queen is dying. Who will you serve? So apart from flubbing a large portion of that, because I've never read it out loud before, which is a good thing to do if you're ever writing. Read it out loud, and then you can put some more full stops in, maybe. yeah, it's given us a lot of ideas. So from that came the idea of... So you could probably tell from the pictures which I read out earlier, where we've got the queen is dead. We thought it might be more interesting if the queen is dying, because that gives us something that might happen within the game, or might not happen within the game. It gives us various factions, it gives us a dynasty, it gives us rivals in a court, which is kind of referring back to that great game idea. And then we're also talking about waves and isles, so that's where the boats and the pirates came back into the pitch, where they're talking about sailing between places. How do you sail between places? Why would you sail between these places? And we also had this pitch, which was really nice, around like a city built on flotsam and junk in a river, and we thought that that might be just the setting for the whole thing. So maybe it's an island with this queen in the middle, and growing up from that, the center of power is the most stable place, and all the unstable parts are where like gangs and things fight over horribleness and the small spoils which they can gather. And then we're also islands around that which could it be influencing it or connected somehow.
Yes, I mean, and I think that gives you a lot of sort of strength purely from a logistics point of view as well, that it's like you can bring all your tables together and each table is an island,
which or represents something on from a different place.
Yes, yeah.
And then you've got like your capital city potentially, and also like the idea of nobles squabbling means that you have a hook for pledging your allegiance to something, to gain something, and they may ask something of you, and you may ask something or give them something back. So
quite, yeah.
Yeah. So just that alone, while it took a while to get to, just gives us so much to jump from, even at this early phase.
I've got ideas now, and I want to make notes, but my keyboard's really loud, so I can't. I'm going to remember them.
That sounds like it's almost a good place to start wrapping up. I don't know whether you wanted to talk any more about like any of the mechanical thoughts around like the game which you've had so far. Or
no, I think from the setting side, it's given me a lot of ideas, and I want to sort of feed that back to the rules team. A lot of it I'm keeping in my head because, like you were saying before, it's very easy to get distracted, and also that there's stuff that we do need to get out realistically. I think I'd like to see getting out in August, or certainly within a calendar month, that would let other people get on with things and start to kind of have their own ideas, because obviously there was a lot of energy. You know, this comes down to the other side of things, where it's the sort of almost the social media engagement side of things, where it's like we had a lot of people who were really excited at the day one and, you know, filling out surveys and stuff. But it's like you've got to keep that momentum up. And you don't want people to be then being like, oh, yeah, I did sign up for that thing.
Yeah. But that's also like some people might not want to sign up until they know what it is they're signing up for, whereas some people want to be in early and say, oh, definitely want to take part. So,
yeah,
like you say, yeah, there is some urgency around, particularly because we set up the general goal of this whole process, and we'll probably talk about like the final thing next time, is to come up with almost like a document that tells you how to roughly build your warband, what you're doing, where you're going to be, some of the fiction around the place, and then encouragement and guidance on how to then feed your ideas back to us about your warbands and things, because we can begin to take those into account and start coming up with other things. So we've got a lot of stuff which we can do at the moment. Like you mentioned, we're using the Necromunda 17 rules. Part of that is actually just going to be writing them out and like understanding the bits which we want to keep and the bits which we don't. And we can keep doing that while this other process is happening. And the same for like items. Like there's so many soulbound books now and so many battle tomes, to pull ideas from, that it is just like almost like a digestion period after we get that and while everyone else gets a chance to think. So
I think once we get that guide out, then we'll have time to do some real kind of crunch to the rules and the details of the narrative and details of the setting.
One thing which I found quite fun to do was inflict my poor fiction skills upon people and just write in that place for a bit to gather ideas. So when we were talking about like what factions and things could be involved, instead of like just thinking about, oh, it would be cool if this, just spending a bit, I had some time like in a hotel room just while I was doing some traveling to be just like, well, who would live out not just on in the city, who would live out on like the reaches of just like bits of floating wood and posts and things, and what would they be doing and what would their society be like, and just talking about that for a little bit just gave a bit of focus. It then became just like, here's a faction idea at the end, but then there's actually more behind it as well, and that now exists as a thing that can be critiqued and changed and can feed into other things. So
yeah, and I think that ties into the accessibility as well, that you want to be able to have things that are snippets that other people can just see and be like, oh yeah, that's cool, maybe my entire warband will be, you know, the flotsam gatherers, or, you know, allied to the flotsam gatherers or whatever, even if they're not a great part of the game. There are these little hooks that people can like hang off and be like, oh, that's good, or that's an inlet, because not everyone is used to create, you know, weird, freaky, you know, odd folk to go wandering around the realms, or, you know, around Ink 28 and things. It, you know, it isn't something that everyone's done before, has a sort of experience of. So it's giving that accessibility and a place to start from, I think, is quite important.
And general scene setting as well. The more like little things which you can put in that hint at the scene helps get those ideas out of people. Be them within the teams, be them within the rules team, the narrative team, or the people who are going to contribute warbands and contribute and play at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly a firm believer that rules should reflect narrative. You know, this shouldn't just be treated in isolation. If you've got games about heroes, the rules should make you feel like a hero. Heroes don't worry about, you know, arrows they're carrying in their backpack. Heroes worry about rolling fistfuls of dice and, you know, doing massive damage and things. It's, you know, and then if you're playing a survival game, you are counting how many tins of food you've got left and worrying about every bandage you use. But and I think this is where it's all a kind of, like you've been saying, James, that it's a process where everything is you know, circling itself, but then also circling around everything else and building off itself and then other areas.
Yeah. And my general drive is to make sure that people create stuff, because I think I might have mentioned it last time, but the most important thing is to keep people creating things. Like, there can be talk around stuff, but if you don't write something down at the end of that talking or while you're talking, there is nothing there to keep critiquing. And that might be fine. That might be letting an idea go and dissolving away into the flotsam of other ideas. But if you want to work on something, you need things to work on, which means creating something. So that's why the drive has been like, let's create that spec, let's create those paragraphs of text that give us something to talk about. And that car revving outside, perfect, but it gives us that drive. And like, by writing a short bit of fiction, that helps consolidate some ideas or bring out new ideas. And at the end of the day, we might just throw that in the trash, but the ideas remain because that existed as a thing to talk about and get ideas from. So yeah, that's my final thought, I guess.
No, it's good. I think it's something that we, you know, you need to always be remembering. It's good for everyone to be remembering and be reminded of. So, yes, oh well, if we draw it to a close there then. Tuning in for next time.
Folks. I mean, it might be a really condensed time that they get all of these episodes in, which would be really exciting. But it'll be like if we fell into a black hole and everyone else is just on the outside.
Yes. Yeah. This is the message, like a video game audio log where everything is condensed and you find out what happened.
Oh my God. This would be the worst video game audio log because I don't know. It would just be terrible. Or is that what podcasts are?
Probably awful video game audio logs. I mean, I'm just thinking now that most video game audio logs are less rambling than they should be if they were real. Just be like, well, you know, the spaceship's half taken over by monsters, but there's a lot of other things been going on.
Yeah, and there's another day. And yeah, anyway, we've been sponsored today by Goop Juice, which, you know, if you're in space and you need Goop Juice, this is the thing. But watch out for the monsters on level 5.
Yeah, I love Goop Juice.
We all love Goop Juice.
Thank you for joining James and myself, and we hope you'll join us next time on the Tiny Plastic People podcast. If you have any questions for us, you can reach us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. And if you want to see something of the event itself, James has produced a book about the event, which is available for download on thetinyplasticpeople.com. Cheerio, everyone, and thanks for listening.